Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of November, recording at 9:13 p.m. GMT. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the four asset classes that I cover. But I also start the Friday broadcast with a quick review of the past week. And for global stock markets, mostly steady, we have been seeing a succession of small consolidations. This is not that surprising. Many of these indices have been up near former highs or had seen quite persistent runs that were a little bit overbought, but nothing that looks really dangerous outside of a few of the Middle Eastern markets, which really have charted their own paths. And here I'm thinking of Saudi Arabia, which Owen pointed out the other day had broken downwards once again. Now, government bonds were generally strong, but ran into some flack, not least the U.S. government bonds here today, where some downward dynamics are showing in the bond futures. And we also saw the dollar fall until it rebounded in here today. And we have seen generally strong action in precious metals and explosive action on the upside for platinum over the last 2 days. The grains have been mostly strong, the grains and beans. I should have mentioned industrial metals. They have been generally steady, but not all that much going on at the moment. After some pretty good runs, copper still ranging sideways. We saw oil on the defensive, the whole petroleum complex pretty well on the defensive. But today, we've seen a pretty good rebound by prices coming towards the latter part of the day. May indicate some short covering at least. Okay, so now let's go back and start again with stock markets. Where are we and so on? Well, this is and where are we going? Make some guesses in that department as I always do. Well, first off, this is seasonally an attractive period. We have completed that medium-term correction that I had been expecting. And really, the outlook is quite favorable here overall. There are some storm clouds, but I'll get to them in a few moments. But say, seasonally bullish period overall. And 2007, well, that will be, of course, the third year of the U.S. presidential cycle, and that's usually, that's the most bullish year on average, say, over the last 70, 80 years or more. So that's all good, but there are storm clouds on the horizon, and I have referred to these in a number of audios, and I want to come back to them here briefly, because those storm clouds tend to they're moving around out there on the horizon, and sometimes taking a step forward and sometimes taking a step back, and we have to watch those fairly closely. Most of them have to do with inflation. Those are the areas that would, inflation is the problem that will be bearish for stock markets. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And it's also a question of how bearish. In other words, does it cause central banks to ratchet up, to ratchet interest rates up again? The key bank in this respect would be the Fed. Or is it not sufficient for them to change monetary policy? The ECB, by the way, is virtually guaranteed to raise interest rates, if not this month, next month. And I think the Bank of England will do the same. But that's not crucial. That's already largely discounted by stock markets. Okay. Now, in terms of those inflationary pressures, and you know my view that this is a long-term inflationary cycle, too much money, too much credit creation, sloshing around the system. Where's the evidence of that? Look at asset prices. That'll provide the really hard, tangible evidence. And we can also see, zeroing in on these some of these asset prices, the strength of the industrial metals, the revival of strength in the precious metals, the strength of the grain and bean complex, and some other commodities. Coffee's quite strong right now, particularly the Robusta coffee crop, and that's been going up for a while. Orange juice and foods, these are generally strong. Some exceptions are livestock contracts, which often move downwards when the grains are moving upwards. But the big one in this respect, well, there are two big ones. The oil price. That really is crucial because all the other commodities, as I've said before, can move upwards, but if oil is moving down or inert at a low level, then that counts for more than all the other what all the other commodities are doing. And it just, in other words, it just cancels all out all the strength that we're seeing elsewhere. And that is the benign environment that stock markets have been enjoying recently. Now, the other one is or concerns the long-dated government bonds. Now, as long as yields are not rising sufficiently to raise eyebrows, then again, all is still well in terms of inflationary expectations. And remember, the Fed is in the business of managing inflationary expectations. So if the oil price is on the back pages, no problem. If bond yields are on the back pages, no problem. It's when they move towards the front, let alone onto the front page, that there will be problems. Now, when might that occur? Well, I've said it's just a matter of not of will it happen, but when it actually happens. And given the strength of many commodities, I think that we should be prepared for the possibility that oil prices rebound fairly quickly once they turn. I don't doubt for a minute that there are some fairly hefty short positions in oil prices right now. Now, oil is a heck of a lot more liquid than platinum, but when those shorts are squeezed, you can get a sharp move, as platinum has just demonstrated. So my feeling is that we don't need to have any sleepless nights here in terms of our equity long positions, but we do need to remain vigilant. Okay, in terms of sectors for the long term, well, you know my view. I think it's Asia by a country mile in terms of both opportunity and safety. And I give safety quite a high premium. And I have said that, people usually think Asia and they think of the Asian financial crisis. Well, Asia's changed a whole lot since that 1997-1998 period. And they usually think, well, gosh, emerging markets, developed markets are so much less risky. Well, sadly, as I've said previously in some of my copy, the U.S., with those debts and deficits and the overextended housing market now correcting, the U.S. is a higher risk than it has been at times in the past. And you can get plenty of risk with the U.S. You remember what happened in 2000, of course. So I do think that fundamentally, the US, despite being a great place to do business and producing fabulous companies, faster than any other country has ever been able to do. In other words, what other country could produce a Google that goes from nothing to being a incredible global power, or Microsoft before it? So that's the USA. But again, I regard it as a risky market, more risky, for instance, than many of the Asian markets right now, which also have better value. So if you don't accept my perception that the risks in the US are higher than for a selection of Asian countries, then and I quite appreciate that that's very much a debatable point, but I give you my view as always, and it's your prerogative to accept it or reject it. But I know you're interested in and listen. There are other emerging markets that from time to time will do better, or other developed markets that will do better from time to time. Europe has been doing quite well recently. I usually regard Europe as being sort of high beta USA. In other words, it'll outperform when Wall Street's moving up, and it'll fall further when Wall Street's moving down. And currently, we have a very small reaction consolidation taking place on Wall Street, but these have been rotational, and Wall Street isn't going down enough yet, at any rate, to frighten all markets. And there's a good chance that it won't do that anytime too soon, but we'll see. This is something we monitor every single day. So, Asian emerging markets for opportunity and safety, that they remain at the top of my list, as you know. And at the very top of that list, particularly for the very long term, is India. The other favorite area of mine is resources, and there's a fair amount of overlap with many of these. There are a number of emerging markets, Brazil springs to mind, obviously, that are major producers of resources. Thailand's another one, going back to Asia, and Thailand is the cheapest market, or certainly one of the cheapest markets, probably the cheapest market in Asia right now, due to the political problems that it has had. But those are temporary. The demand for Thailand's commodities, and the strength, the growth of the Asian region, are likely to be around for a lot longer than the uncertainty over Thailand's political situation. But Thailand isn't India, and it isn't China either. And I prefer both of those bigger markets over the long term. I look at Thailand as a recovery candidate at this stage, but also one that will, over the long term, I think, certainly have a respectable performance within Asia. But some of these smaller markets, they tend to come into fashion and out of fashion, and that can happen fairly quickly. The most in fashion of those Asian markets right now is the Philippines, and it's getting a great run, and when that chart deteriorates, it'll probably go into a period of underperformance for quite some time. But the region, more importantly, the region is well, it offers the best combination. I've already said, I'm repeating myself, of safety and long-term potential. The resources sector, the industrial resources sector, you know how much I like this. And it covers, well, pretty well everything: the energy, the industrial metals, the precious metals. All of these are extremely interesting. The agricultural commodities really are more dependent on what's actually happening with weather, but you've seen what's happened to the Australian wheat crop. You have seen, I trust, what's happening to the global stockpiles of corn and now wheat. Will soybeans follow? Quite possibly. Orange juice, another example. So this whole sector, the entire commodity sector, is interesting. I maintain that this is a super cycle. Now I'm going to talk more about that in a few minutes, but I want to. But I'm really talking now about stock markets that are resources producers. Right now, I would expect them to be doing extremely well generally. You want to keep an eye on governance, and it's a wild card that we have to watch out for. I'm thinking of those moves towards socialism in South America. They haven't had an adverse impact so far, but that's because there's so much liquidity sloshing around and stock markets have been performing quite well. But when investors become disgruntled, cautious, it's going to be falling markets. So when that next occurs, the next medium-term correction, some of those markets that have big question marks overhanging them concerning governance, they will show their beta on the downside when that next happens. Okay. Moving on to the government bonds area. I don't like this sector. I maintain that we're in the early stages of a secular bear market for government bonds. A secular bear market would involve rising yields over time, not exponentially, or not in a linear fashion, I should say, but in rolling waves. And therefore, bond prices will be moving down on a similar basis of rolling waves. Bonds have rallied on the basis of the global economic slowdown. That's hardly surprising that that would happen. But I don't think that there's a lot of scope in terms of long-dated government bond performance from here on. I don't think we're going to see a recession for the global economy, and something would have to go badly wrong for the global economy for those long-dated government bonds to do really well. Now, meanwhile, there is too much supply in that sector, and there's too much inflation in the pipelines. You know, people are still in denial over inflation. But you know, the evidence is everywhere. As I've said before, look at your household bills and look at that painting, that Jackson Pollock painting that just so was reportedly sold for a world record breaking price. Well, Jackson Pollock, okay. Taste in art is subjective, but that wouldn't be at the top of my list, that's for sure. But the important point, I don't want to digress here, is that record prices for art markets are another sign of inflation. Okay. Moving on to currencies, the US dollar should have an overall downward bias in my view. But it's still propped up by advantageous interest rate differentials against the other reserve currencies. And therefore, that when the dollar stops going down, it becomes increasingly susceptible to a rebound, a temporary rebound, because people who are short the dollar with leveraged positions find the interest rate differential eating into their profits or creating losses for them. It's a little bit like being in a taxi, having a nightmare, if you've ever had this type of nightmare, being in a taxi that's stuck in a traffic jam and the fare meter is just whirring away at blinding speed. So today, when the employment figures suggested that the US economy was a little bit stronger than people had expected. This is only the statistic du jour, but that's what happened, and the dollar suddenly rebounds. Okay, but overall, currencies, I think, aren't going to see any spectacular moves. It's a rather dull area in terms of financial opportunities right now, and dull means hazardous as well, because you get these little short-term moves that last a week or two, and then very often see a fairly lengthy pause occur. Now, but I do expect, as I say, the dollar to range a bit lower over time, but no collapse, no dramatic moves. Remember, no country, and I mean no country, wants a strong currency in this environment of intense pressures, competitive pressures, that is, due to globalization. And that's leads me nicely on to the precious metals, which are beginning to recognize that once again. There were clearly some short positions in precious metal markets. Platinum could not do what it did yesterday, and today it rallied almost as much again, up another $46 in here today, up to 1,210. Just a tremendous move. You want to have a look at that in the charts. Clearly, there were a lot of short positions. All the talk has been about hedge funds being in commodities on the long side and driving up prices. Well, yes, of course, they participated in the rallies, but they're essentially momentum players, and they were short platinum. That is now very obvious in some large numbers, and got squeezed yesterday and today, and that may not actually be over. I'm sure we'll hear about the repercussions of this at some point. Somebody's performance is going to suffer big time. Gold and silver, again, good action in here. No doubt there was some short covering in those two as well. But it's not just short covering, and these performances are beginning to look attractive again in various different currency terms. You can see all those charts in the library, and I posted some. Was it yesterday or probably, no? I think it was the day before. Now I like this sector. We've seen the lows. I expect these markets to be ranging back up to and through the highs that we saw in May. And over the long term, I expect them to go a whole lot further. And the fact that no country wants a strong currency is as powerful an argument for having the monetary metal, gold, or its proxies, as one could find. And I will certainly want to be represented there. Industrial metals, people have been underestimating the upside potential all along, and I think I've been as bullish as anybody of this sector, but some of the gains that we've seen have caused my jaw to drop. And then the resilience after some of the upward accelerations, again, is absolutely incredible. But in a secular bull market, as you've heard me say before, we can expect most of the surprises to be on the upside. And that has certainly been the case so far. I notice in looking at various reports by analysts that those that are bullish for the fourth quarter of this year in terms of the industrial metals, and perhaps into the early part of 2007, when they make their long-term forecasts, they've got prices falling away very, very dramatically, and that has alarmed a subscriber or two. Well, nobody knows what's going to be happening to those metal prices out there at that point. My hunch is that the bearish forecasts or the sharp declines, well, yes, represented by sharp declines in those forecasts for 2008, 2009, and beyond by so many analysts, are prudence at this stage, and they can always revise them up later, can't they? But my feeling is that the global economy is likely to be stronger for longer than most people expect. I think we'll certainly see some pockets of stagflation in the developed economies, the United States and Europe, European economies. So that covers most of them, doesn't it? Well, they'll definitely see some stagflation from time to time. I'm talking about the next couple of decades here, but I think that this phenomenon that I've referred to so often of all of these countries, these developing countries that weren't even on the radar as far as major consumption of resources was concerned, largely because they had these more abundant economies due to primitive economic systems. Well, they've all embraced capitalism. They are benefiting enormously from globalization and the transfer of technology, and are growing very, very rapidly, and middle classes are rising very, very rapidly in those regions. And the again, the critics who are the people who have said commodity prices are going to collapse, well, a lot of them have based this on a view that China's economy was going to collapse. I don't doubt that China's economy will have a recession at some point, that's obvious, but there's no sign of it now. There is a controlled government-induced slowdown, but we're still talking about the best growth rate, GDP growth rate in the globe. And we still have a global economy that is synchronized in a phase of expansion. But the really important point in all this is that these developing economies, many of them that are benefiting from the export of commodities, they are also consuming more commodities, and the infrastructure development is going to go on for decades. And then we have the rising middle classes in these countries, and the consumption, the consumer spending that will arise in those countries, all purchasing gadgets and all of these things, from clothes to gadgets that consume resources. Okay. So I'm a firm believer in the commodity supercycle. It is being led by the industrial metals. That's where we have seen the greatest supply and elasticity meets rising demand. And in those industrial metals, of course, include uranium, which remains by far the best of the energy stories. Subscribers who are doing exceptionally well in junior uranium mines, well done. I salute you. It's not an area that I've participated in. I try to avoid junior miners myself because I'm able to get a good bang for my buck in leveraged futures markets and leverage trades in other areas that I don't have to watch quite so closely. But a number of you I know have participated in these junior uranium mines and are doing spectacularly well. Remember your technical disciplines, because the worst thing that could happen would be to ride these things all the way up and ride them all the way back down. And I think you can pretty well guarantee that most of the people who are in junior miners, particularly the junior uranium miners today, are going to do just that. That's what happens. That's what happened with the NASDAQ bubble, so on. And I have never seen a share that went to the sky that didn't fall back dramatically, and none more so than junior miners. And we have to remember that most of these junior miners in uranium are not actually making any money. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be in them. That doesn't mean that you can't do very, very well. I just don't want to see Fuller Money subscribers who have participated in this sector riding it all the way down. This is trailing stop territory. But I'll get on with my just completing this broadcast so I don't make this audio too long overall. I think I've reached the end on this, except to mention those food prices. Those are still very much in form. And I'm thinking of things like the soybeans, the wheat, the corn, coffee. I bought a little bit of coffee in here today. That looks like it could run again. Again, I think the super cycle can stretch on, as I've already said, for a number of decades. Okay, well, it's been an exciting week for me and a very profitable one. I hope it's been at least as profitable for you. So I'll just say, have an absolutely fabulous weekend. That's exactly what I intend to do. And we'll look forward to more excitement and hopefully some more profits next week. All the very best.